photograph albums. Oh, I suppose that must have been Cora when she was younger and a lot thinner. And the man with the straggly beard.
Nothing there for us, Mr. Poirot. With Richard Abernethy's body cremated, there's nothing to be proved either way. But there are the people, of course, the people who heard Cora Lonkine say what she did and thought she might possibly say it again, going into a little more detail.
Exactly. And it is with them that I have been concerning myself, with the aid of my good friend, Mr. Goby.
Oh, Goby? The inquiry agent? Mm-hmm. Well, I wish I had the benefit of an organization like his. All those university types with BBC accents going around telling people they're conducting a government survey.
I will give you the benefit of his investigation.
Ah.
Now, let us begin with George Crossfield.
Ah.
He has been making use of funds entrusted to him to finance his gambling. Horses. Little excursions to Monte Carlo, not to mention a number of highly ornamental but excessively expensive women.
Mm.
On the day of the murder, he claimed to have been at the races at Hurst Park, but, in fact, he left Paddington Station for an unknown destination. It would not have been in the least difficult for him to get to Litchett's and Mary.
I reckon he'd figure high on anyone's list of suspects.
Now let us consider Michael Shane.
What, the actor?
Yes, my friend, the actor. His alibi was that he was in London having lunch with Mr. Oscar Law, but in fact he sent a telegram to say that he could not keep the appointment. At 12 o'clock he hired a car and did not return until the evening.
So he could have gone anywhere?
Mm-hmm. His wife, Rosamond, says she was out shopping. Just that. And there is no way of proving that she was not. Oh, what can you do with a woman like that, said the admirable Mr. Goby. And I know all too well what he meant. Never shall I forget the killing of Lord Edgware. I was nearly defeated. Yes, I, Hercule Poirot, was nearly defeated by the simple cunning of a vacant brain. Ah, the very simple-minded have often the genius to commit an uncomplicated crime and leave it alone. Oh, a little more beer, perhaps.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Boyle.
Susan and Gregory Banks say they were at home all day, but Mr. Goby has established that she went off in her car at 1 o'clock and did not return until 5. As for Mr. Banks, it seems that he has a very curious record. When he was working in a dispensary, he gave a woman the wrong dose, as a result of which he had to be rushed off to hospital.
Oh.
She recovered, but he resigned his job out of guilt. He told his doctor that the woman had been rude to him when she came into the shop, and he had deliberately made up a near-lethal prescription.
Mm-hmm.
He said that the woman had to be punished for being rude to him.
How on earth did Goby get all of that?
Oh, I fancy he has his methods. As for our other suspects, Mr. Entwistle has already established that it would have been perfectly possible for both Timothy Abernethy and his wife to have got to Litchett St. Mary, since he was left alone in the house for over 24 hours, and she went for a very long walk in the country while the local garage tried to trace what had gone wrong with her car. A mysterious fault, which she herself may well have contrived.
So, where do we go from here? Well, more to the point, where do you go, Mr. Poirot?
To the Abernethy family home, Enderby Hall.
Mm-hmm.
As I'm sure you understand, I want very much to question these people myself. But I have no authority for doing so. I shall have to resort to a little camouflage. I shall pretend to be looking for a large country mansion as a domicile for foreign refugees. I shall present myself as Monsieur Pontellier of UNARCO.
What's that one, is it home?
The United Nations Aid for Refugee Centers Organization. It sounds well, do you not think?
Yeah, well, it ought to do the trick. And is there anyone at Enderby Hall who will know your real identity?
Just one person. the only one who appears to be above suspicion, Helen Abernethy.
Ah, Monsieur Poirot, I hope you haven't been looking for me. I came out here to cut a few late roses for the drawing room.
Ah, they are very beautiful. Ah.
There's something that's been worrying me.
Hmm?
About the moment when Cora said that Richard had been murdered. Something I felt at the time to have been wrong.
Wrong? In what way, madame?
That's just the trouble. I don't know.
Do you mean something wrong about one of the people in the room?
Yes, something of the kind. But I can't remember who or what it was.
It was perhaps the reacting of some particular person to the word murder?
Perhaps. But I don't remember noticing anyone in particular. We were all staring at Cora. Shall we go in? Mm-hmm. I'd like to put the roses in a bowl before we settle down to lunch.
You arrange flowers admirably, madame.
Thank you, Monsieur Poirot. I'm very fond of flowers.
During the time you were staying here with Mr. Abernethy, did he ever say anything about any member of his family that might be relevant?
You're speaking like a policeman.
I was a policeman once. I have no status here. No right to question you. But surely we are both hoping to find the truth.
Richard was disappointed in the younger generation. Old men usually are. He disparaged them in various ways. But there was nothing that could possibly suggest a motive for murder. I think this bowl might look well in the green malachite table. Could you hold it for a moment while I lift the glass shade off?
Oh, of course, madame. Did anyone tell Mr. Abernethy that his niece Susan's husband had come near to poisoning a customer?
Oh, how very careless of me. It just slipped through my fingers.
Oh,
no, please leave it, Monsieur Poirot. I'll get the maid to clear it up. We don't want you cutting your fingers. But perhaps we should move the table out of the way until we can get a new shade made for it. Will you help me carry it out to the cupboard under the stairs?
Certainly, madame.
Thank you, Monsieur Poirot. Now, what was it you were asking me? I've quite forgotten.
Oh, there is no need to repeat the question. It was of no importance.
Is there anyone whose life would bear close investigation? Must people's private lives be dragged into this?
I fear that there is nothing that can be ignored, madame. In this case, it is not evidence I am searching for, but people. Tell me, madame, of those there, who knew Cora best?
Well, I suppose I did. Maud hardly knew her at all.
Then, taking you as the person who knew her best, why do you think she spoke as she did?
It was very characteristic of her.
Oh, what I mean is, was it a bêtise, pure and simple? Did she just blurt out what was in her mind without thinking? Or was she being malicious, amusing herself by upsetting everyone?
You can't ever be quite sure about a person, can you? I've never known whether Cora was simply ingenuous or whether she counted childishly on just making an effect.
Mrs. Timothy Abernethy stayed here the night after the funeral, I believe.
Yes, she did.
Did she talk to you about what Cora had said?
Yes. She said it was outrageous and just like her.
Did she take it seriously?
Oh, no. No, I'm sure she didn't.
And you, madame, did you take it seriously?
Yes, Monsieur Poirot, I think I did.
Because of your feeling that something was wrong?
Perhaps.
I want to talk to all those who were present in the room after the funeral when Cora said what she did. It is important that I should meet every single one of them. Now, it would be a great convenience and it would be strategically satisfactory if I could meet them here.
Surely that would be very difficult to arrange.
Already I have devised a means. The house it is sold. Also, Mr. Entwistle will declare. He will invite the various members of the family to assemble here and to choose what they will from the furnishings before it is all put up to auction. A suitable weekend can be selected for that purpose.
Are you laying a trap for someone, Monsieur Poirot?
Alas, madame, I wish I knew enough to do that. No, I have still the open mind. But there is one thing that is doubtful. it may not be possible to secure the presence here of Mr. Timothy Abernethy. I am told that he never leaves home.
Oh, I think you may be lucky there. Huh? I heard from Maud yesterday that workmen are in painting the house. Timothy is making a terrible fuss about the paint affecting his health. And I think that he and Maud would be only too happy to come here. Perhaps for a week or so, while Maud's ankle gets better.
Maud's ankle? What is the matter with it?
She's broken it. Luckily, they've taken on Cora's companion, Miss Gilchrist.
How did that happen? Who suggested it?
Well, I think Susan fixed it up. Susan Banks.
Ah, so it was the little Suzanne. She is fond of making the arrangements.
Anyway, Miss Gilchrist will be able to stay and look after the house while Timothy and Maud come here.
I can't do it. I simply can't. Not here, all alone in the house. I know you'll think it foolish, but I'd be terrified to be here by myself.
Oh, of course. I understand. After all that happened at Lichards and Mary. Well,
I didn't feel it at first. It's only come over me since I came here. This morning, a nun came to the door collecting for the Convent of the Blessed Virgin, and I remembered that a nun had called at the cottage just before... Oh, dear. Oh, dear, I am in a bad way.
I suppose it's what they call delayed shock.
Well, if we can't find any other solution, you'll just have to come to Enderby Hall with us.
Should we go?
Oh, yes. Don't you think so?
Might be as well, I suppose.
Of course, all the stuff in the house is quite hideous. But there might just be some jewellery.
Right, then. Time I was off. I must go and have a word with Rosenheim. Oh, and I shall be rather late this evening. I'm dining with Oscar to discuss the American offer.
Darling Oscar. He'll be so pleased to see you after all this time. Do give him my love.
What do you mean, all this time? We had lunch together last week.
Oh, how funny. He rang up yesterday and said it was months since he'd seen you last.
He must have gone off his head.
You think I'm a fool, don't you?
Look, I don't know what you're driving
at. It's rather silly telling me a pack of lies. You never went to see Oscar.
And what about you? You said you were going shopping with Jane. You couldn't have done. She's been in America for weeks.
Yes, that was stupid of me. I just went for a walk round Regent's Park.
You've never been for a walk in Regent's Park in your life. What's it all about? You've been so different lately.
I've just been thinking about things. I was wondering whether I should go down to Lichard's St. Mary and have a word with that companion of Aunt Cora's. I want to know what was said when Uncle Richard went down there.
Well, he'd hardly discuss his feelings about the family with an outsider.
Of course he wouldn't. She'd have heard through the door.
Rosamond, who do you think killed Cora and your Uncle Richard?
Darling, don't be absurd. You know as well as I do, but it's much better never to mention it.
From my chair by the fireplace, in a corner of the library, Monsieur Pontalier of Yonarco observed the Abernethy family. None of them had been able to resist the temptation to come down and carry off the spoils from Enderby Hall.
I don't suppose I have long to live, but for sentiment's sake, I should like to have the old dinner service.
I am afraid that may be rather difficult. You see...
You're too late, Uncle. I asked Helen to mark it off to me this morning.
Mark it off? Well, what good is it to you? You're not even married.
Which of them, I asked myself, was a potential murderer?
As a matter of fact, I collect Swode, and it is an excellent example.
George might kill, as a cornered rat kills.
I don't see what all the fuss is about. It's quite hideous anyway.
Susan might do so, calmly and efficiently, to further a plan.
If Richard had made a proper will, the disposal of the estate would have been left solely in my hands.
Timothy might have done it because he hated and resented his brother.
But he didn't.
Hold your tongue, Susan. Don't you talk like that to my wife.
Gregory, because he had a morbid streak that craved punishment.
You mustn't excite yourself, Timothy. I'll get you a sedative, and then you can go to bed.
And Maud, because Timothy was her child. And where her child was concerned, she would be ruthless.
Anyway, I want the malachite table.
Rosamond might kill because she was so frighteningly simple in outlook.
Oh, no, I want that.
Here we go again. It's just like the voice he inherited.
And Michael because he had a murderous cocksure of vanity.
There are so many wonderful things in the house. The malachite table is particularly lovely. I've never seen anything quite like it.
Even Miss Gilchrist might have contemplated murder if she had thought it would give back to her the Willow Tea Room.
But, of course, it's of no concern of mine.
Had Miss Gilchrist, realizing that she had gone a little too far by intruding into the Abernethy family circle, retired to her room?
She's such a pathetic old pussy, clinging to those bits and pieces that remind her of Cora, the amethyst brooch and the little table, and those frightful seascapes. Everyone painted from life, she told me. But Cora cheated. She copied them from postcards.
How do you know that?
One of them is of Polflexen Harbour and shows the lighthouse and the pier. Since the pier was blown up while she was still living in Brittany, she can't have painted that one from life. I even found the postcard in a drawer.
Poor Miss Gilchrist.
Well, poor or not, she's been a little treasure to us. Always ready to run upstairs 4 or 5 times a day.
She cooks well, I'll admit that. Pity she lost her nerve.
Lost her nerve?
Wouldn't be left alone in the house. She said she was frightened when a nun came calling at the door.
Well, I asked myself, had I heard about a nun before? But there are no shortcuts to the truth. I had to observe and to listen, to talk to the family about UNARCO and my work with refugees.
Oh, refugees all over again.
If I appeared not to know much English and not always to understand what was said to me, it only made the members of the family more at ease in my presence. Little by little, the facts were falling into place. The rest was up to the little grey cells.
It's all rot, isn't it, Mr. Pontellier? You've got nothing to do with UNARCO or refugees or any of that, have you?
It was the following evening. Once again, everyone was gathered in the library, and I had announced my departure for 9 o'clock the next morning.
You've come here to spy on us, haven't you? You're a detective.
You have great perspicacity, madame.
Not really. You were pointed out to me once in a restaurant.
But why have you not mentioned it until now, madame?
I thought it'd be more fun not to.
But this is disgraceful. Is it true?
Yes, it is true. I am a detective.
Who sent you here?
I was commissioned to inquire into the circumstances of Richard Abernethy's death.
By who?
For the moment, that does not concern you. But it would be an advantage, would it not, if you could be assured beyond any possible doubt that Richard Abernethy died a natural death?
Of course he died a natural death. Who says anything else?
Cora Longconnel said so. And now she herself is dead.
She said it here, in this room. But I didn't really
didn't
think...
Didn't you, Susan? It's no good pretending. You won't take Monsieur Pontellier in.
His name isn't Pontellier. It's Hercules something.
Hercule Poirot. At your service.
God. And may I ask what conclusions you have come to?
He won't tell you, darling. Or if he does, what he says won't be true.
That night I did not sleep well. I was perturbed. And yet I did not know why I was perturbed. Snatches of conversation kept on going through my mind.
Cora cheated. She copied them from postcards.
She was frightened when a nun came calling at the door.
I want the malachite table.
Oh, no, I want that.
And something that Helen Abernethy has said about the moment when Cora spoke of her uncle's murder. But what was it?
Kensington 5498. Yes, what is it?
This is Helen Abernethy.
Helen, it's 7 o'clock in the morning.
I'm sorry to have got you out of bed, but you did tell me to ring you at once if I remembered what it was that was wrong when Cora said that Richard had been murdered.
You mean you've remembered?
Yes, but it doesn't make sense. It came to me when I was looking at myself in the mirror last night. You see, I...
Helen? Helen? What's the matter? Helen, are you there?
And that was all she said? That she was looking in the mirror?
Yes, that was all.
Then for the rest, we shall have to wait until she regains consciousness. And that may not be for a long time.
Is it as bad as that?
Yes, it is. A serious concussion. It is just possible that she fell and hit her head on a marble doorstop, but I suspect that she was struck by somebody. For that reason, I have instructed that she should be taken to a nursing home. And it is for that reason also that I am telephoning you from the local post office. However, there is something you must do for me. I want you to go up to Stansfield Grange.
Timothy's house? But they're both at Enderby.
Exactly. There is no one there except for a woman who is looking after the property in their absence. What I want you to do is to take something out of the house.
Really, Poirot? I can't stoop to burglary.
No. It will not seem like burglary. You must tell the woman there that you have been asked by Mr. Abernethy to fetch this particular object and take it to London.
You're sure that this is really necessary, Poirot?
It is vital. The whole of my investigation depends upon it.
And what do you want me to do with it?
You will take it to an address that I will give you. Now, listen carefully, and I will tell you exactly what it is that you have to look for.
Oh, very well. But I hope you know what you're doing, Poirot.
I expect Aunt Helen will be all right. After all, what's concussion? Often clears up completely after a couple of days.
What I can't make out is what she was doing telephoning at that unearthly hour.
Well, she probably came down to ring the doctor. Had a giddy fit and fell.
I don't believe a word of it. She was coshed. She must have been. I mean, it all adds up. Uncle Richard poisoned, Aunt Cora killed with a hatchet, Miss Gilchrist given arsenic, and Helen struck down with a blunt instrument. And it will go on like that until the only one that's left will be it, the murderer.
And why should anyone want to kill the fair Rosamond?
Because I know too much.
I've been asked to summon you all to the library. Our tame detective has convened an informal meeting.
Last night, Mrs. Shane announced to you all that I was a private detective. For myself, I had hoped to retain my camouflage for a little longer. But no matter. I am, in my own life, quite a celebrated person.
Are you really? Funny that I've never even heard of you.
It is not funny. It is lamentable. However, since you asked me last night who had called me in, I will tell you. It was Mr. Entwistle.
Interfering busybody. He had no right to do anything of the kind.
He wished me to find out whether there were any suspicious circumstances surrounding the death of Richard Abernethy. And I can tell you categorically that I have found none. There is no reason to believe that he died anything but a natural death. I have done what I was asked to do, and I shall be departing by the 12 o'clock train.
But you can't just leave it all like this. What about Aunt Cora?
And who sent the poisoned wedding cake to Miss Gilchrist?
And who coshed Helen?
Until the time comes for my train to depart, I shall be in the little summer house, should any of you have anything you may wish to impart to me. That is all.
I was told I should find you here, Mr. Poirot.
Good morning, Inspector.
I gather that you've managed to assemble your full cast of suspects.
Yes, that is so.
And the result is that Helen Abernethy gets knocked over.
You must not blame me for that. If she had come to me instead of ringing Mr. Entwistle...
She was in the process of spilling the beans to him when... Wonk.
When, as you say, wonk.
Any idea what she managed to tell him?
Very little. Only that she had looked at herself in the mirror. But I think I now know what she was going to say.
And what was that?
Inspector, it is not yet the time. For the past hour, I have been sitting in the summer house, waiting for someone to confide in me. But the results have been, a little variable. First, there was Miss Gilchrist, who wanted to tell me what she heard Richard Abernethy saying to Cora when he called at the cottage.
I couldn't quite hear what Mrs. Longquenet said, but I did catch the word police. And then Mr. Abernethy burst out quite loud and said, I can't do that. Not when it's a question of my own niece. And then I had to run into the kitchen because something was boiling over.
Very curious. What exactly did she mean by that, I wonder?
And the moment she had left, Gregory Banks burst in.
You're wrong about everything, Poirot. Richard Abernethy didn't die a natural death. I killed him.
Oh? Why did you do that, Mr. Banks?
He was a snob. Filthy snob. He thought nothing of me. He sneered at me. People can't treat me like that and get away with it.
But why come and confess this to me?
Because you said he hadn't been murdered. I had to show you you're not as clever as you think you are. And besides, I must be punished. Don't you see?
And then?
Then he saw his wife coming and told me to tell her that he had gone to the police station.
He wasn't even near the place when Uncle Richard died.
I know a little of his history. He was for some months in a mental home before you met him.
He was never certified. He was a voluntary patient. Craig has never had a chance. That's why I wanted Uncle Richard's money so badly. I knew Greg had to set up for himself, to know that he was someone.
Perhaps you love him too much for safety or for happiness, madame. You wanted your uncle's money, not for yourself, but for your husband. How badly did you want it?
There are quite a few questions I'd like to put to that young lady. She's too clever by half. Did you have any other visitors?
Only one. Michael Shane. I took the liberty of telling him you were not happy about his alibi.
That's extremely awkward. I told Rosamond, you see, that I was lunching with Oscar Law that day.
And perhaps you were not?
I motored down to see a woman called Sarah Dainton.
The cinema actress?
Yes. It's rather tricky. I mean, it's quite satisfactory as far as the police are concerned, but it won't go down very well with Rosamond.
Miss Dainton would testify for you?
She won't like it. But as it's murder, I suppose she'll have to do so.
Do you think he's telling the truth?
How can one be certain? And even if she does say he was with her, what does that prove? An infatuated woman will say anything.
There's something else I have to tell you. Mm-hmm. We've had a piece of very curious information from the Mother Superior of a convent near Lichard St. Mary. Two of her nuns had been out collecting from door to door. It seems they called at Cora Longnay's cottage the day before she was murdered. The day Cora was here dishing the dirt about her brother, and Miss Gilchrist was visiting a relative in Bournemouth. Mm-hmm. And the nuns said they could hear sounds from the cottage, sighing and groaning.
Ah, that is very interesting. And did the nuns go back at a later date to try again?
Yes, as a matter of fact, they did. On the day of the inquest.
The day that the poisoned wedding cake was left in the cottage.
Oh, no, that's a ridiculous idea.
My ideas are never ridiculous. But I have noticed one of my victims over there, by the waterfall. I think that I must have a word with her. But please, Inspector, do not go away. It will not be long now.
I'll wait for you back at the house, Mr. Poirot.
Too much of water hast thou, fair Ophelia. You are perhaps studying the whole?
The only Shakespeare I've ever played was Jessica in The Merchant. And that was in rep. It's a lousy part anyway. I thought you were supposed to be catching the 12 o'clock train.
I missed it. I have been sitting in the little summer house hoping that you might perhaps pay me a visit.
I had a lot to think about. Important things. I was trying to come to a decision.
About your husband?
In a way.
The police officer leading the inquiry into Mrs. Longnay's murder is here. He will be taking statements from all of you about what you were doing at the time of her death.
That'll put Michael on the spot. He thinks I don't know he was with that woman.
How did you find out?
It's perfectly obvious. His nose always twitches when he tells a lie.
Oh, how devoutly thankful I am that I am not married to you, madame.
And now he's discovered that I wasn't shopping that day and is madly suspicious about Regent's Park.
What is all this about Regent's Park?
I went there, you see. After Harley Street.
Huh?
Just to walk about and think. Naturally, Michael thinks I went there to meet some man.
I think, madame, that you will keep your husband. But the poor Susan, she will lose hers.
You're not trying to tell me that Greg's having an affair with someone.
Infidelity is not the only way of losing a husband.
You mean that Greg poisoned Uncle Richard and hatched Aunt Cora and sloshed Helen on the head? That's preposterous.
Then who did, madame?
George, of course. He's mixed up in some kind of currency racket. I had it from some friends of mine who were in Monte. I expect Uncle Richard got to hear of it and was just going to cut him out of his will. I've always known it was George.
There's a telegram for you, Mr. Poirot. Arrived a few minutes ago.
Thank you. It is exactly as I suspected. See for yourself.
I don't understand a word of it.
The time has come to tell you all.
You sound like the heroine of a Victorian melodrama.
If you would be so good as to assemble everyone in the library, Inspector.
Going to enjoy your moment of triumph, eh? It can't come a moment too soon, as far as I'm concerned. That Gregory Banks is driving me out of my mind. He's confessed to killing Cora now.
For the second time, I announce my departure. I intend to catch the 9:30 train immediately after dinner. I go because there is nothing more for me to do here.
You could have told him that all along. Never was anything for him to do.
I came here originally to solve a riddle. The riddle is solved. Let me first go over the various points which were brought to my attention by Mr. Entwistle.
Why can't you just tell us here and now who did it? Why do we have to go through all this rigmarole?
Because it is my way, Mr. Shane. First, Mr. Richard Abernethy dies suddenly. Secondly, after his funeral, his sister Cora says he was murdered, wasn't he? Thirdly, Cora herself is killed with a hatchet. And then, Miss Gilchrist, the dead woman's companion, is taken ill after eating a piece of wedding cake that contained arsenic. Let us, for the moment, concentrate on the last happening. I am inclined to accept the statement of the postman that, to the best of his knowledge, he did not deliver the package containing the wedding cake. Therefore, we must take into consideration those who were in a position to put it through the letterbox. There were Miss Gilchrist herself, Susan Banks, who was staying at the house, Mr. Entwistle, who was attending the inquest, and a mysterious nun.
But surely there isn't any doubt about Miss Gilchrist being poisoned. She would hardly have done that to herself.
And there is, of course, the consideration that she did not stand to benefit from Richard Abernethy's death, and only in a very minute degree from Cora's.
Whereas I, on the other hand... Is that what you're going to say, Mr. Poirot?
In your case, your motive would almost certainly have been security. You had very good reason to believe that Miss Gilchrist had overheard a conversation between your uncle and Cora which referred to you, and therefore you had a very good reason for getting rid of her. You also refused to eat any of the wedding cake which Miss Gilchrist offered to you.
But I don't like wedding cake.
Now, let us take a look at the mysterious nun. There was a nun who appeared at the time the wedding cake was delivered, a nun who appeared at the door of Timothy Abernethy's house, and a nun who called here the day before Richard Abernethy's death.
3-1, the nun.
But now I would like to introduce a little factor of the case which has not been mentioned before. A postcard of Polflexen Harbour.
Oh, for goodness sake, the man's a mountebank. What's a picture postcard got to do with it?
Everything, Mr. Abernethy, as you will see. It was what led me to the truth. Let us go back to the beginning.
Oh, not again.
There would have been no reason at all to suspect any foul play in the death of Richard Abernethy had it not been for the words uttered by his sister Cora after the funeral. You will believe that murder had taken place not so much because of what she said, but because Cora had always been notorious for speaking the truth at awkward moments. And that brings me to the question that I suddenly ask myself. How well did you all know Cora Lankanay?
What do you mean?
The younger generation had never seen her at all, or not since they were children. The only people present that day who knew her at all were Mrs. Timothy Abernethy, who had seen her only very briefly at the time of her own wedding, and Mrs. Leo Abernethy, Aunt Helen, who had not seen her for over 20 years.
Are you saying that Aunt Cora wasn't Aunt Cora? Do you mean that it was somebody else who was murdered?
No. It was Cora Lankanay who was murdered. But it was not Cora who came here the day before to her uncle's funeral. The woman who was here that day came for one purpose only, to create in the minds of Richard's family the idea that he had been murdered.
Absolute nonsense. What was the point of that?
To draw attention away from the other murder, the murder of Cora Lankanay herself. The two deaths were bound to be considered as cause and effect. But if Cora's death were not related to her brothers, and if the attempt to make it look like a robbery were considered unconvincing by the police, then suspicion must inevitably fall on the woman with whom she shared her home.
But surely, Mr. Pontarlier, you're not suggesting that I would commit murder for an amethyst brooch and a few worthless pictures?
No, Miss Gilchrist. For rather more than that. One of those worthless pictures, as Mrs. Banks discovered, had been copied from a postcard, but Mrs. Lankanay always painted from life.
I don't see what you're driving at. What does it matter?
Cora was in the habit of picking up pictures at sales and from junk shops that she believed might turn out to be old masters. Supposing that for once in her life she really had chanced upon a masterpiece. And although Cora did not recognize it as such, Miss Gilchrist did. Her father, I have discovered, was an artist. She knew that Cora was in the habit of taking her little finds to a friend of hers who was an art critic of some standing, and she must act before the true value of the picture was discovered. Richard Abernethy dies unexpectedly, and the whole plan leaps into her mind. She had learned enough from her father to conceal the old master with a seascape she painted from an old postcard of Polflexen Harbour.
I knew that had to be important.
It was easy enough to administer a powerful sedative in Cora's early morning tea that would render her unconscious for the day of the funeral, although a nun, yet another nun, would hear her moaning restlessly in her bedroom. Miss Gilchrist then set out for Enderby to play Cora's part at the interment of Richard Abernethy and the reading of the will. Without ever having set foot in it, you knew Enderby Hall very well, Miss Gilchrist. Cora had talked to you endlessly about her childhood here with her brothers and sisters and told you all about their children. None of the people at the funeral suspected for a moment that you were not Cora. You were dressed in her clothes, padded out a little, and since she always wore a false fringe of hair, it was easy for you to assume that. Nobody had seen her for 20 years. And in 20 years, people change so much that one often hears the remark, I would never have known her. But mannerisms are remembered. And Cora had very definite mannerisms, all of which you practiced carefully before the mirror.
I haven't the faintest idea what you're talking about.
And it was there that you made your first mistake. You forgot that a mirror image is reversed. when you saw in the glass the perfect imitation of Cora's bird-like sideways tilt of the head, you did not realize that it was actually the wrong way round.
So that was what Helen noticed when she said that the idea came to her as she was looking in her mirror.
Exactly. That was why she said something was wrong.
And that was why she was crushed on the head.
I never did anything of the sort. The whole thing is a wicked lie.
I may as well tell you that Helen Abernethy's condition is not serious. She will soon be able to tell her own story. However, that was not your only mistake. When Rosamond and Susan began to quarrel about the malachite table, you said that it was particularly lovely. But you could not have seen that table as Miss Gilchrist, because it had been put into a storeroom before the family assembled here this weekend. You could only have seen it as Cora Loncanay when you came here after the funeral.
You know, Miss Gilchrist, the moment you arrived here, I knew that I'd seen you somewhere before. I ought to have realized that it was you who played Cora, but one never looks much.
No, one doesn't bother to look at a mere companion help. A domestic drudge? Almost a servant?
Of course, the suggestion of Richard Abernethy's murder was only the first step. You pretended to have overheard a conversation between him and Cora so as to throw suspicion onto Susan Banks. A nun, who actually did call at the cottage, gave you the idea for a wild red herring of a nun who followed you everywhere. And as for the poisoned wedding cake, so long as prompt action was taken, you knew you were not in any real danger.
No wonder she was so insistent that I should call the doctor.
But what about the picture? What was it?
I arranged for Mr. Entwistle to collect the painting of Paul Flexen Harbour from Miss Gilchrist's room at Stansfield Grange.
That was a damned liberty.
Oh, poor, 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 poor. The overpainting was removed by a leading firm of art restorers. This evening, I received a telegram. Definitely a Vermeer.
I knew it was a Vermeer. I knew it. Oh, she didn't have the faintest idea. Always prattling on about art and not recognizing a Vermeer when it was under her nose. She was a thoroughly stupid woman.
And you killed her in that atrociously brutal way for what you'd have got for that painting.
It would have enabled you to buy a tea shop, would it not, Miss Gilchrist?
I was going to call it the Palm Tree. I meant to start it in a nice neighbourhood where nice people would come in. I had thought of Rye, or perhaps Chichester. Oak tables and little basket chairs with striped red and white cushions.
You would come with me, Miss Gilchrist.
Oh, certainly, Inspector. I don't want to give you any trouble, I'm sure. After all, if I can't have the palm tree, nothing really matters very much. I've never imagined a ladylike murderer. It's horrible.
Oh, I've just come back from the assizes. They brought in a verdict of guilty, of course.
After my investigation, they could hardly have done otherwise.
I wouldn't be surprised if she ends up in Broadmoor. She's gone right over the edge since she's been in prison. Perfectly happy, though, and quite gracious. Spends most of her time making plans for a chain of tea shops.
And how are the members of the Abernethy family disposing of their newfound fortune?
Susan is opening a cosmetics business. But it may be some time before the wretched Gregory joins her, if he ever does. He's having a rest cure, as she puts it.
And Rosamond Shane?
Giving up the theatre for good, or so she says.
Aha. That accounts for the visit to Harley Street. She will play the role to perfection. Already I see the most delightful pictures of mother and child in the sketch and the tatter. But I fear she was deeply disappointed when the murderer turned out to be Miss Gilchrist. She had fervently hoped that it would be George. Perhaps he will do it one day, she said. What fun if he did. Ah, mon vieux, I have heard murder called many things, but this is the first time I have ever known it to be described as fun. Perhaps my little grey cells have been missing something all these years.
In Agatha Christie's After the Funeral, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat. Mr. Entwistle, Frank Thornton. Inspector Morton, John Baddeley. Miss Gilchrist, Jennifer Piercy. Helen Abernethy, Tessa Worsley. Maud Abernethy, Jill Balkan. Timothy Abernethy, John Hartley. Susan Banks, Fritha Goody. Gregory Banks, Trevor Rawlins. Rosamund Shane, Tilly Gaunt. Michael Shane, Tam Williams. George Crossfield, Ian Masters. After the Funeral was dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams.